This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
In 2005, America's video game industry surpassed movie box office sales. Last year, global video game sales reportedly reached $32 billion, more than DVD and Blu-ray sales combined. And yet, video games seem to be stuck in a rut of predictable shooters and other high-resolution cliches.
The innovative spirit that marked the early days of video game development was crushed under the weight of the high-stakes, multi-million-dollar businesses built on the appeal of consoles like Microsoft's Xbox, Sony's PlayStation, and Nintendo's Wii. Now, independent game production is again on the rise because the geeks want it, the gamers want it, and more recently, as you'll hear, even giant producers like Microsoft want it. Clive Thompson, who writes for Wired and the New York Times Magazine, says that innovation started to creep back into game design after more than a decade in hiding about 7 years ago.
What happened was that it became possible to do your own game because Flash and Shockwave came along, which are like these little languages for programming something inside a browser. You know, you had tens of millions of people that could potentially play your game, and you could put it online and get it out there for free. So a lot of the young talent started going, well, I'll have my job where I'm the assistant animator for Scooby-Doo number 4. You know, something completely horrible, boring to play, boring to make. And in their spare time, they started saying, I'm going to try and design a little game on my own that is going to be played in Shockwave or Flash on a browser. And this was the real first boom, the first flowering in indie video games.
And you say that independent game designers are students of ludology?
Yeah. Ludology is the study of play, why we like to play, why we find meaning in it.
And what it doesn't mean is 3D graphics or other technological wizardry.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, play is play whether or not it's done on a computer or on grass, you know, or with dice and pens, right? What is a game? A game is just a bunch of quite arbitrary rules that you give to someone that give them a task to do that's actually, you know, difficult because you're limiting what they can do. You know, like when you're playing basketball, you stop dribbling, you can't go any further. That's a really arbitrary rule, but if you take it away, basketball isn't fun anymore. So what game design is the game design is not about thinking about visual things or graphics. It's about thinking about rules that make for a fun environment, a fun thing to do.
You say that console makers have structured the economics of the game industry in a way that's bred less creative games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I wanted to make a game for the PlayStation 3, or the Xbox, or Wii, and I say, okay, I'm going to print 100,000 of these. Well, I have to pay a fee for every one of those 100,000 discs I print, even if they just sit in a warehouse and I never sell them. Games have become, just like Hollywood, a very expensive hit-based industry. So you make 10 games, they all cost $10 million. 9 of them flop, 1 of them is a hit, and it pays for all the other ones. So it's incredibly hard to make money in this industry, and that's why innovation has been very flat sometimes for years.
That's Clive Thompson. He'll be back in a few minutes. Now, the companies that make the consoles say they put those fees on every game disc to subsidize the artificially low price of the consoles. They sell them at a loss in order to build and maintain a mass audience. But some of them do concede that their industry could use an injection of the indie spirit. And so in 2006, Microsoft introduced its XNA Developer Kit, a set of programming tools that give amateurs the ability to make a game for the Xbox. Microsoft's Boyd Moulterer says that XNA makes it easy to create realistic backgrounds, 3D graphics, and dynamic sounds.
What XNA gives you is an environment on your Windows machine that allows you to write your game, test it out in your Windows machine, and send it over to a regular retail Xbox and see it running in all of its glory. Now, normally a development kit for the professional for an Xbox is, you know, running $10,000 a piece, and this lets you get going for free on the Windows machine and for $100 a year on an Xbox. You do need to know how to write code, but you've got 99% of the box, especially the graphics ability, at your disposal.
When someone makes a game with XNA, how do they share it with other Xbox users?
You can package your game up and send it to one of your friends who also knows how to put it on their Xbox. Or you can submit it to the community games section on the Xbox, and that goes through a peer review system where other people like you are going to look at it and make sure you don't have naughty things in there. And then it goes up for sale, and everybody who's on Xbox Live can see it and download your game.
You said that peers review it to make sure there's no naughty things on it. I understand that Microsoft's policy is no porn, no Nazis, or no service.
That's basically right. The other thing we care a lot about is that you accurately describe your game so that anyone who's coming up to it can make their own informed decision on whether or not they want to download it. But we very specifically do not review those games. We're very much leaving it up to the community to decide what comes through and what doesn't.
Do these amateur programmers really have a chance to make money, or is Microsoft really just exploiting the game community's desire to create?
Well, hopefully it's a little bit of both. I have hopes that someone in their basement will be able to make a decent piece of change if they make a good game.
Microsoft takes a third of that, right?
Yeah, roughly.
Having all these amateurs in on the process, do you think that's having any impact on the big game developers?
Oh, absolutely. One of the biggest problems in the industry is there is a lack of enough trained people who know how to make a game and have experience making games. So the big publishers are partly looking at this as a pool of people who are teaching themselves how to be in the industry. Second, there's some crazy new ideas that are coming out, and the big publishers are looking for their future titles. Third, just the fact of having a lot of niche titles that may not have a big audience but definitely speak to those people, it means that we have a huge variety and a huge number of choices for our customers.
Boy, do you like to play video games?
Yeah, I do.
What's the funnest program that's come from an amateur?
My favorite game to come out so far is The Dishwasher by James Silva. He started completely as an amateur. He made this game. He put it into the Dream Build Play contest that we have. It is fun.
It's just basically a shoot 'em up, isn't it?
Well, it is kind of a hack-it-up sort of game, but it is fun. It's that magic word that's hard to quantify and hard to qualify, but it's got it.
Boyd Multiver is manager of Microsoft's XNA program. James Silva, former Dishwasher, created the game Dishwasher Dead Samurai using the XNA tools, and he won Microsoft's Dream Build Play contest, which gave his game wide distribution on Microsoft's Live Arcade platform. Silva studied computer programming in college and made his game while getting a master's. He created games before, but this one was something special.
Being able to deploy on a console, I mean, that just, it was such a big deal to me.
So tell me a little bit about Dishwasher. It seems a little autobiographical.
Yeah. Well, the story, I got the idea for the concept like 5 or 6 years ago when I was working as a dishwasher at a little cafe. I just got really, really taken by the idea that there should be a game where a dishwasher just flips out and kills bad guys. You know?
Did this thought occur to you while you were doing dishes?
Yes.
Do you think that there's something that you can do that those big studios can't?
Well, there's definitely more room for just experimentation. And I kept saying to myself, like, who the heck has an idea about making a game about a dishwasher? When you've got a big studio, you've got so much money on the line that they really like to vet concepts to make sure that they can sell the concept.
What makes your game fun?
It's got a pace that's really just crazy. It's really visceral. It's really responsive, and it's pretty unique in these strategies that you can develop. It's not so much a button masher as like a strategic button masher, and there's so much, you know, weird little nuance in it. You can really do awesome if you figure it all out.
Now that you've quit your dishwasher job, do you have another game up your sleeve?
Yeah, I've got two of them. I kind of whipped into shape while I was waiting for Dishwasher to go through rounds of testing.
And what are those called?
One is called Zombie Smashers X4 Guitar Apocalypse, and one is called ZP2K9, and I don't remember what that is supposed to stand for.
So do you think you can make a living at this?
Oh, I hope so. So far, I think it looks doable. We'll see how the sales go through. I quit my day job, as everyone is warned not to do in life. You know, if you go eat at a restaurant and I'm washing your dishes, you'll know if things didn't go quite as well as they were planned.
James, thank you very much.
Sure.
James Silva is the creator of Dishwasher Dead Samurai. Okay, so Clive, have you ever wanted to design a game?
Not really. It's very, very hard to do. Designing a game is like designing a constitution for a country. You have to think through human behavior and what your rules are going to do.
Writer Clive Thompson says that independent creators have been exploring human behavior with their PC and internet-based games for years. But when indies made the leap to consoles, it opened up a whole new world.
A lot of people play video games on computers, but way more play them on these consoles, like a PlayStation or a Wii or an Xbox. You know, if you just design games for computers, it's a little bit like saying, well, you know, I'm going to design movies for just a small run of theaters. What these sort of new avenues for making an indie game and putting it on a console have done is allowed these very small teams, one or two people, to bat in the big leagues.
So at this moment, what's the impact of these independent games on consoles going to be?
You think about what happened in film, was that indie film came along, and some of the techniques of storytelling and acting techniques that the indies were doing in these tiny little films started bleeding into big Hollywood blockbusters. And I absolutely think the same thing is happening now, because you get these little players, one or two people who are making these very weird forms of play. The big studios are starting to pay attention because they're getting aware that you can do cool things if you have a cheaper budget. So they're starting to realize, well, maybe we should try and rein in these insane economics of our industry and be more creative at the same time. So I definitely think that the rise of sort of indie game makers is infecting and hopefully going to revitalize the mainstream of game design.
But give me an example. What weird, cool thing are these indies doing that could actually influence the big companies?
Here's a great example. There was this game called Flow. You sort of took control of this little amoeba. It didn't tell you what to do. You just sort of guided it around. Eventually, you'd see things. And when you got close to them, you could sort of eat it. And depending on what you ate, you would seem to go deeper or higher almost into the screen, as if you were descending into water going upwards through water. And you would encounter different things that were sort of trying to eat you. It was a very almost zen-like experience. That's what he intended to do. He wanted to make a game that would relax you. This was so successful, so popular, that he got a commission to do a zen-like game for the PlayStation 3 called Flower that just came out. You're blowing a flower petal around this very barren landscape, and as you blow it towards other little flowers, they open up, and you get these lovely bits of music and gusts of color. And eventually you get this huge flock of petals you're guiding around with this gust of air, and you're just trying to sort of bring the landscape back to life. It is playful, it is fun to do, but it actually chills you out. It calms you down, you know, which is a lovely thing for a video game to do. Something that if you went into a major game studio and said, you know, I want $20 million to do a game where you just blow petals around and it calms people down, they would have thought you were absolutely insane, right? So he had to do this by himself, just him and maybe a friend sitting at a computer, to prove that it is cool and fun to make a game that calms you down. And then he was able to get a commission to do a different game with a much larger team on the PlayStation 3, and it's been a big hit.
It seems to me that calming down just strikes at the heart of what we assume video games are supposed to do.
That's just one example. There's a guy who made a game for the Xbox that has no graphics. So you load up the game and you're holding a controller. You just close your eyes and listen to stuff. You'll hear sounds and you try and move towards and move away from them. And I love that idea. A video game with no video, right? It's an audio game. So you're getting these really crazy, interesting experiments. They're really blowing open the idea of what a video game can be.
Well, let me ask you the big cultural question here. If, in fact, video games may become the largest form of home entertainment in America within the next year in terms of dollars spent, how will that change the culture?
I certainly would hope that this breeds, particularly if we get more inventive forms of game, a type of a cultural mindset that's more interested in the complexity of the world and complex systems. Because the one thing that you do when you play a video game is you sit down in a state of total ignorance. You don't know what you're supposed to do. You don't know how this game works. And the process of figuring out what to do is really what is fun about the game. In fact, people often stop playing the game once they figured it out. And that's a great inquisitive mindset that video games quite uniquely tap into. So, you know, 30 years from now, imagine a president who did this, you know, as their primary cultural activity for 25 years. I mean, I hope that's an interesting proposition. I hope it's a good proposition. We'll find out one way or another.
Thanks very much.
No problem.
Clive Thompson is a writer for Wired and the New York Times Magazine.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.